The University of Wisconsin is a leader in many fields, and certainly bioenergy and green technology is no exception to that. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And today we're joined by John Greenler. John directs education for both the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. John, always fun to have you with us.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Larry.
Well, thanks so much for coming by. Also with us today, Phil Kohlmeyer. Phil is a graduate student at UW-Madison in electrical and computer engineering. And Phil, great to have you with us as well. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you've been working with electric vehicles for a little while now for your research.
Yeah, it's been about the last 7 years.
Yeah, and how'd you get interested in this?
It's kind of a funny story. When I started my master's, there was this silly three-wheeled red electric car called the Corbin Sparrow that they had at the engineering hall, and I thought it was cool.
And that got you interested in it. Oh, my goodness. And so now you've gotten to the point where you've been working, doing a lot of work with electrical vehicles, obviously, and I want to get into that. But first, do you have a handle on the history of electric vehicles?
Oh, yeah. That's something I'm very interested in. The history of electric vehicles, I think, as most people know, is pretty old. The first electric cars came out more than 100 years ago. And there were a few companies, Baker Electric, Detroit Electric, and they were essentially making vehicles that looked like a horse-drawn carriage but had a battery pack and and a motor, and you could drive around town. It's kind of come up again many times in recent history. The most recent would be in the early 90s with the EV1. If you've heard of the movie Who Killed the Electric Car,
right?
This kind of chronicles that, where California came up with the mandate. Everyone had to make an EV. And unfortunately, that died. so a lot of the professors have lived through thinking that EVs were going to come alive several times. But this time, I think it's for real.
Yeah, I think you're right. What do you see as the advantages of electric vehicles over those that are maybe gas or diesel powered?
I think we can look at them a few ways. I think for the user, the fuel is cheaper. Electricity is like $1 a gallon gas, and it's less maintenance. There's fewer moving parts to break. I think about it a lot when I'm just around town, like in the local urban environment. Cars they're loud and they're smelly and they pollute. And electric vehicles, they don't have any of that. You don't have the local emissions that are causing health problems. And I think we can also look at it from a kind of a broader perspective, the energy policy and climate change perspective. Electric vehicles, they don't burn oil, so they reduce our imports, and they have potential at least to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, so lots of good there. And my wife drives a Toyota Prius, and you still get about 50 miles to the gallon on the road with that. Little less, I have to admit, in wintertime, but
right.
But still pretty good. John, in what situations are they most appropriate?
Well, you know, I keep on having to kind of reconceptualize, where they're most appropriate. Clearly, I think, in the urban environment for commuting, I think they really stand out, in a number of different capacities. And, there's commercial examples out there now, the Nissan Leaf, the Chevy Volt, the plug-in hybrid Prius at this point in time, I think all, really do a good job on that, So there's multiple ways of thinking about that. There's the urban environment more broadly, but then it's also really important to think about where in the country we are, where are we driving that vehicle, and very critically, where is the electricity coming from? What kind of fuel are we using to generate that electricity is a real big issue. But, Phil, for example, really opened my eyes when, it was several years ago now, I think I first, caught sight of a hybrid Ford F-150 pickup truck that Phil had converted. And I went, really? An electric pickup truck? Is that really something, that has any value? And the answer clearly is yes. And so, I think we're still really learning a lot about, what are the, best case scenarios, where it's best used for electric vehicles. There's a lot to explore there.
A lot to explore. We had a listener, Patrick, who's phoned in already and says, I'm the owner of a Chevy Volt, I couldn't be happier. I drive 33 miles to work. I charge in the parking lot and I drive home. I haven't used any gas in more than 6 weeks. What I like best about the car is that its backup gas engine affords me flexibility for longer trips if I need them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Phil. Oh, well, I was so excited about the Chevy Volt when it was going to come out that I actually went and got a job at General Motors and worked in Detroit 2 summers.
Oh, so you could learn more about it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, tell us about your research with trucks. How did you get going on these trucks?
Yeah, when I started this project, it was 3 years ago, and this actually was before there were any vehicles. The Chevy Volt had only been on the market for a month when I started the project, so there weren't really any EVs. But at the time, the idea was I was working with a sponsor who wanted to electrify buses. And I was very interested in building a real state-of-the-art vehicle that was like all these production vehicles, same type of technology, but I thought a bus was too big. So we went with the truck, which is a great vehicle to convert. It has a lot of extra room, it seats 6 people, and it's a vehicle that uses a lot of fuel, so there's a big benefit to converting it to electric.
Yeah, and it's worked pretty well.
Yeah, you know, I think the other thing that I hadn't really thought about, which Phil really educated me on, is is the question: well, how are most pickup trucks used? And the fact of the matter is, most of it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, is really kind of short haul work. You know, you're at a job site, you need to go 5 miles maybe or something to the lumber yard, and then you're doing stop and go traffic back to whatever you're working on, and you may be able to plug in the interim or whatever. So it's really kind of low miles. It's kind of stop and go, and it's not a really heavy load. It's kind of a moderate load. So in many ways, that really seems to fit a good bill in terms of what an electric vehicle does well.
You know, we should take some calls. You can join in, by the way, if you have a question or comment as we visit about electrical vehicles and the research there. Phil's done a lot of work with electrical vehicles of many types, but he's spent a lot of time on trucks lately, which is really, he's got some interesting findings here with that. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Brad in Sockville, let's go to you now. Hi, Brad. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I love the show, and I'm glad you guys are bringing this up. I always had a concern with if everybody would switch over to electric cars using the batteries. Like, won't we have a shortage of all the chemicals necessary for the batteries? And then once the batteries have, done their life and they're no longer rechargeable, what are we going to do with all of those and the recycling of that or the disposal of the batteries?
Sure. I'm sure those are all good questions. And Phil, what do you think?
I find myself asking that same question. And of course, no one has the definitive answer as to where all the materials are going to come from. I think, the studies I've seen suggest that there is a lot of lithium reserves in the world. A lot of them are in Bolivia, I believe. But I think there's enough to make a lot of electric vehicles. And I think now that it's something that people are looking for, lithium, that they're starting to find more reserves of it. So I don't think we're at risk of running into a shortage anytime soon. As far as recycling, when I asked myself this question, I found a video that Tesla, the electric car manufacturer, had online, and they show one of their battery packs and they shred it apart and then they kind of explain how they're going to separate out the lithium and all the other materials for recycling. The example that people always use, though, is lead acid batteries in cars. Lead acid batteries are one of the most recycled materials that exist. I think the estimate is 99% of that lead gets reused. So if we can use that as a model, I think we can do well.
Yeah. Right. And wouldn't you say that there may be things beyond lithium?
Oh, yeah.
John, what?
Yeah, it's a very intensive area of research right now in terms of looking at kind of electric storage, type of technologies. We've got some very interesting research going on here at UW, even within the Wisconsin Energy Institute itself. We've got some very active areas of research looking at batteries, both in terms of how to make the batteries more efficient, how to make them more long-lasting, what are some of the alternative types of materials that we can utilize to make the batteries. I think it's a sure thing that we're going to see a lot of development in battery technologies, short, medium, long term. It's a big area of research. So, yeah. And one of the nice things about batteries in terms of recycling is that they're very, very concentrated as compared to other recycling efforts. When you look at something like plastic or paper, you're talking about material which is very diffuse and distributed. When you're talking about a high value vehicle, it's much easier to get to that material and to handle it appropriately. So.
Yeah. We have Lynn in Chile, Wisconsin, with a question for you. Hi, Lynn. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. My husband and I, a while back, installed solar electric, and we also have solar heat. And I'm wondering how what role solar will play in the electric vehicles. The gentleman who installed our solar has a solar panel on top of his van, and I'm wondering, that would eliminate a lot of, recharging as far as the plug, to be able to plug this into solar.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of them are sold. I know Toyota sells a lot in California, for example, right. The solar power. But Phil, comment?
There's kind of two ways to look at it. So you're describing the scenario where you actually have solar panels on your vehicle. Well, and on your house. I mean, when you look at them on the vehicle, it's funny. You can buy cars that have solar panels built into the roof, but typically they're only used at the moment for, like, running a fan to cool the cabin or maybe to supply some accessories. In the future, if you can do it, I think you could get 3 or 4 miles of range per day, maybe a little more. And I think the best use is, what you've done. Put a bunch of solar panels on your house. It's pretty easy. You can make enough energy to power your whole car just on your roof.
Yeah, it's definitely the best case scenario. If you have, a solar array full of a photovoltaic system at home that has the capacity to charge your car, you're so close to being carbon neutral, in terms of concerns about greenhouse gas emissions and global warming, you've really hit the sweetest of spots and the ideal. So
all right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Phil Kohlmeyer, a graduate student at UW-Madison in electrical and computer engineering, and John Greenler, director of education for both the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute, as we visit with them about electrical vehicles and the research that's going on around them. Larry Miller here, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Miller. Great to have you along today as we visit with our two guests, Phil Kohlmeyer and John Greenler, about electrical vehicles. Again, you can join us with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you, and we've got some kind of cool things up on my Facebook page relating to electric vehicles, so I hope you'll go to that page, The Larry Miller Show. Hans in New Berlin has a question. Hi, Hans. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is, why can't we set up a program where everybody essentially uses the same battery pack, so instead of having to worry about charging or fast charging, whatever, when you pull into a charging station, you just have the battery pack swapped out, you get credit for any charge you have in it, and you just pay for the charge, kind of like you do with propane tanks in so many places. That seems like a natural way to get past the charging and range limit issue.
So it turns out that is a good idea, and that there was a company called I think it was Better Place or Project The Better Place started about 5 years ago that wanted to commercialize that exact plan. And they actually got some automotive manufacturers to come on board with it. I think it was Renault, a French company. Mm-hmm. And they built a bunch of these battery swapping stations in Israel, and they got people to buy this version of the car that had a battery pack where you literally could drive in to this fancy-looking station. It looked kind of like a fancy car wash, and in like 2 minutes, they would swap your battery, and you'd drive away, and there'd be no waiting for a charge. Tesla has also demonstrated this, although I don't know if they have plans to bring it to market. Now, the unfortunate thing about the Better Place project is, for whatever reason, the company didn't succeed. They did succeed in building some vehicles and building the stations, but they failed in the long run. Now, looking to the future, is there potential that automakers will adopt that model? Not really sure. The automakers don't like to cooperate if they don't have to. I shouldn't say that, but to have a common form is difficult because every vehicle has different requirements as far as range and power, etc. I think what we will see, though, I think that we'll see companies like Tesla, where they have a lot of their own vehicles, start to offer their own services where you can just pull in and do a battery swap, and that's perfectly technically feasible.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks, Hans. Ken in West Bend, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call.
I was wondering, you're welcome. I was wondering if you knew, had any knowledge or information regarding a collaboration between Henry Ford and Thomas Edison in developing a electric car. And I know they did. They had prototypes out. And I was wondering if you had any comment on that.
Know anything about that, Phil?
I've seen a picture of Thomas Edison with an electric car. And I know that Thomas Edison, I'm on the radio, so I don't want to make any mistakes in what I say, but I feel like I read that he had a battery, like a nickel battery that he had designed and that he was pushing really hard to put in EVs. And I feel like I've even heard that some of these batteries still work today.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. I would guess, though, it's kind of similar to, there were several companies that started at that same time period where they made these electric cars. They went 25 miles, maybe. They went 25 miles an hour. The story I've always heard is that when they perfected the electric starter, so you didn't have to hand crank the car anymore, that was really when the electric car started to die. But I don't know any details about this. I'd like to know more if you do.
Yeah, and Ford was definitely an innovator in terms of fuels as well. I mean, he also had vehicles that were adaptable for biofuels as well, which is something we frequently talk about. Mm-hmm. So he definitely was thinking broadly about how to get those cars moving.
Yeah.
Well, Thomas Edison did develop a battery system where you would lease the battery. You take a filling station, you'd lease the battery, they charge you for so many hours on it, put a new battery in, and away you'd go. Thomas Edison would control all the charging stations in the large metropolitan areas in the United States, so you couldn't go too far away, and Edison and Ford were trying to work on power-generating systems like windmills and that type of thing so that the farmers and all that could recharge your batteries. The reason that thing didn't work, it worked fine in the cities, but the roads were so tough out of the cities that it would shake the battery and it would destroy the life. But Thomas Edison did develop completely a new type of battery, a much more efficient battery than the standard battery. And I do have a lot of knowledge on that. I actually may have one of the prototype 20 cars that Edison and Ford put together, and I've been trying to get it authenticated and get some various people to look at it. And I happen to hear your broadcast, and I thought maybe you knew more information or would want more information about it.
If I'm right, I think some of those early batteries were actually wood framed as well. So a lot has changed in the years.
That would be really cool. Well, you can reach these guys. Phil, how does he get a hold of you?
Oh, I would love to see this car. Let me just say that. I mean, I love this history.
I'd love to show it to you. I don't want to give too much information all over the phone.
Obviously. Right, right.
Yeah, you can get a hold of me just by sending me an email at my wisc.edu address, pjkohlmeyer@wisc.edu.
So, and P, what is it again?
PJ.
PJ Kohlmeyer, and Kohlmeyer is spelled Kohlmeyer.
Okay.
At wisc.edu.
And if you're interested in energy work at the university in general, the Wisconsin Energy Institute, the website is energy.wisc.edu.
Mm-hmm. And is it okay?
Since I'm sitting in my car, my daughter's writing this down. I'm going to have her repeat that email to you, if you don't mind, to make sure we have it correct. Okay, you have it correct? Okay, good. Yeah, I'll contact you.
We have your phone number, too. And actually, if you wouldn't mind, Phil could call you back, too.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Ken. And, hey, if you've got a photo of that car, you want to post it on my Facebook page.
That'd be great.
That would be really great. So my Facebook page is The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You don't have to be necessarily on Facebook in order to see the page. You don't have to be a member of Facebook or anything. So there you go. And, well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Phil's excited, that's for sure. You know, there's so many different ways. We had Judith posted a question on Facebook about the show today, and she said, would you consider an electric vehicle? What would you need from one to make it feasible for you? Now, Vincent, one of the listeners, says, well, I'd like one that'll go 400 miles. Are we ever going to have one that'll go 400 miles without a charge? Not in our lifetime, huh?
Well, we're pretty close with a Tesla,
yeah.
Right? The higher end Teslas, I mean, you're gonna pay a premium for it. I think almost 300 miles, right? So,
well, that's what a normal, 365 miles. That's what most of us would get
right.
On a tank of gas with our gas car. So they've got it. I mean, it could be done right now. In other words, you're saying
it could pretty close. I mean, 400 is more than you can do with the Tesla. I think the question that you have to ask is, how expensive do you want your car to be?
Yeah, do you want a $200,000 car? What does a Tesla cost?
It's for the model that will go 265 miles. It starts at it's like $80,000.
Yeah.
Oh.
But, when you look towards the future, an economy of scale, I mean, that's, I think it's pretty easy to say, boy, if we can do that, at very limited production scales now, that without, from a major kind of industrial perspective, that's within reach to really be able to bring that kind of economy to, broadly to, to our citizens. So in the not too distant future.
Well, I can think of so many examples. The one I always think about is one of my professors buying a calculator that costs $1,200, and you can buy one that do the same thing today for $5.
Right.
So it's just that.
And the Tesla's a lot more fun than any old calculator.
A lot more fun. You can join in. Here's the number to call if you have a question about electric vehicles, or maybe you've got an experience to share, certainly with them. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or again, post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. And, I was talking about changing out batteries and so forth. Judith just got back from Paris, and they have a car sharing program there. It's sort of like the bike sharing program that exists in Madison and Milwaukee and some other places, but this is with cars, all electric vehicles. So you pay a certain amount of money, and there's these electric vehicles out, and if you are part of the deal, you get to get in them and take off. Good deal.
Sign me up.
Yeah,
it's a car sharing program, and it seems like those conditions would be almost perfect for an electric, where you probably have a charging station right where the cars are placed. And, when you get there, you're going to probably find a vehicle that's already charged. You take off, you park it somewhere else at another charging station and leave it there, and it just gets charged. So that's pretty cool. Luke wondered if you could, Phil, comment on the new dual-cell vehicles from Honda and Toyota. They are considered electric vehicles, but the batteries are charged using hydrogen.
Oh, on the fuel cell vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I've heard people say interesting things along the same route. It is, this is one of the nice things. An electric vehicle and a fuel cell vehicle, they essentially have the same powertrain. They have a an electric motor. They have a power converter, and then they have an energy source, which in the battery pack is the or in an electric vehicle is the battery, and then the fuel cell is hydrogen. And the fuel cell converts hydrogen to electricity directly. As far as like commenting on them, I think it's really cool that they're starting to be able to lease them. They have, I think, 20 fueling stations in California now where you can go just like a gas station and fill your car up. These vehicles have a range of a few hundred miles. You know, there's always this constant debate, though. There people are they say, well, EVs are affordable now, but fuel cells are still they're quite expensive. These vehicles probably cost several hundred thousand dollars. So I think, again, that's the challenge with the fuel cells. How do you store the hydrogen? Right. How do you convert the hydrogen to electricity?
How do you move that hydrogen around? It's a there's a real fundamental infrastructure kind of concern with that hydrogen. With electricity, we already have, you know, our grid is there. We have the infrastructure to broadly provide electricity. But when you look at hydrogen, we're really starting from scratch. And so not that we can't do it, but it really needs to provide us with something, you know, a big, significant advantage. And the other question is, you know, what are we doing to generate that hydrogen? If we're using fossil fuels to produce that hydrogen, you know, when we look at the big picture concerns such as greenhouse gas emissions and global warming, there can be a lot of concerns.
Sue in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Very interesting show. I'm curious to hear what your guests might say about involvement on the part of large oil corporations fighting this effort.
What's your view? Do you think the oil companies are against the electric vehicles?
Well, you know, once again, I think we need to look at a very kind of broad framework here in terms of electric vehicles and where they fit and where they don't fit. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, in the long run, you know, lighter weight vehicles, electricity, you know, so even pickup trucks have a lot of opportunity. But there's, you know, there's a lot of liquid fuel consumption that we don't really see day to day, whether it's, you know, that we see the semis barreling down the highway, but we really don't think much about the trains or the big ships that are plying, you know, the oceans bringing materials from, you know, to us from China, et cetera. So there's a very big demand for fuel that I think it's going to be tougher for, for electricity technology to replace. Same for flying. I don't think we're going to be flying commercial planes in the near future on batteries. I mean, you can fly a plane on solar, but so, you know, I think there's a, you know, it's just a portion of the overall kind of fuel economy that electricity is kind of replacing or whatever. Phil, it looks like you've got something to
yeah.
share there.
I mean, I think my answer, well, I wasn't very old 12 years ago, but my answer would have been different then. I would have said it sure seems like the oil companies are doing something to stop EVs from coming around. I mean, everything suggested that people wanted to use more oil. The auto companies were building very inefficient cars, and they weren't investing in these technologies. But
that's different now.
Yeah. Oh, man. I just can't even believe it. Like, our sponsors for our graduate program are they're not the oil companies, but they're like every big auto manufacturer and plane manufacturer and everything that uses oil. And everybody is putting tons of money into making more efficient vehicles. That's like every single company's goal. So I think if the oil companies want to fight it, they're losing. That's my opinion.
There's going to be plenty of ways to use oil.
Definitely.
I think it'll for a long time to come. We have Philip in Madison next. Hi, Philip.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Thanks for the program. I didn't necessarily need to be on the air here, but I just, the Ford Edison electric car, just aside, there is one on display at the airport in Fort Myers, Florida, the regional Southwest airport. And it's been there quite a few years. It looks like it's an old car. You never know it was electric. So,
All right. Thank you for calling. You guys aware of that?
That's news for me.
Yeah, very cool.
Time for a field trip.
Yeah, it is. Thanks, Phil. We have a Facebook comment from Tim. Have you guys heard of solar roadways? They claim if every road was converted to a solar roadway, the U.S. could produce 3 times more energy than we use.
Yeah, it's strange.
What's that concept?
I just, and I'm assuming it's the same idea. I just saw a little video on this topic. The idea is that, you know, like a road is made out of asphalt, but why not have it be solar panels with some sort of clear surface that you can drive on over the top? It could be a road, or it could be a parking lot or whatever. So that's the idea. You have solar panels, then you can do other things too. They have like lights in them, so you can like flash like warning signs with the road. Have some other services. I mean, my first thought is, if you want to generate a lot of electricity, it's a lot easier to put solar panels in a field instead of having to drive over them. But I think the idea is intriguing, because if you can get some other benefits out of it for the roadway, I mean, why not look into it? Mm-hmm. You know, if you can get other benefits with it, maybe there's an equation that works.
Rocky in Neshkoro, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just wondering, I haven't heard too much about the cars going down the road, the electric cars, and generating their own electrical power through the wind generation. What do they got scheduled for that? Or what kind of deals they got going on with that?
All right. So how about generating? Now, Rocky's talking about somehow using the wind power from your car to charge your battery as you go along.
Yeah, so this is, you know, the idea of having solar panels on your car to generate energy makes sense. The sun's shining, you're collecting that energy. Now, the issue with a vehicle is you're always trying to overcome the forces acting on it, and one of those forces is aerodynamic. That's actually the major one. If you put a wind turbine on your car where you're spinning blades, you're essentially going to be creating a force that's opposite to the force that your vehicle has to make. So unfortunately, you won't make any energy. Now, you know, there's another way to look at this. I worked on a very silly project when I was an undergraduate, where the idea was you have a wind turbine in your trunk of your car, and you have it on a telescoping pole, and then when you're parked, you're charging your car by lifting this wind turbine above it. Hey, that idea works. If you want a wind turbine on your car, you'll make energy while you're parked, but not while you're driving.
Not while you're driving. Okay, was that your idea to try?
No, even too silly for me. I'm pretty silly, but that's one step beyond.
Oh, my goodness.
That's classic.
Yeah, Rocky, thanks. Thanks for calling. Bob in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. A few months ago, there was an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel newspaper about an enterprising and evidently very successful gentleman in Waukesha County who has a business refurbishing the batteries for electric cars. My recollection is that the cost of doing that runs from $6,000 to $9,000. I don't recall how often the article indicated, if it did, how often one has to have one's battery refurbished. But if those numbers are anywhere close to accurate, please explain to me why I want to buy one of these vehicles. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks for calling. Phil, comment?
Yeah. I'm not familiar with the exact company, but I'm familiar with companies doing very similar things. So I think the issue here is all the plug-in electric vehicles are very new, and they haven't gotten to the point where they need their batteries refurbished. So these companies, usually what they're doing is they're looking at hybrids. First model Prius is, you know, it's 10 or 12 years old. And this is a big problem. If your Prius that is 10 years old, the battery fails, it could cost $5,000 between the batteries, a couple thousand dollars, then electronics is another couple thousand, and the labor is another thousand. So what these companies have done, which I think is very smart, they've done something the automakers aren't willing to do. They've said, oh, just bring your car in and we'll take the battery out. We'll just pick out the bad cells. There's a few hundred battery cells that make up the whole battery. We're going to pick them out. We'll put in good ones. We'll clean any corrosion, and we'll charge you, you know, maybe $1,000 instead of five. But yeah, this is a real issue. And I hope with the new vehicles coming out, the new hybrids, that they're, you know, they have long warranties, 100 to 150,000 miles. So you have that much time to be guaranteed no problem.
I think there's 150,000 warranty on my wife's. I think it's 150,000 on that Prius.
Yep.
And I've had people call and say, well, I've driven mine already 200,000 miles, and it's still going strong. So, there's some that are going to fail, just like, anything. You're going to have some that are going to fail, but a lot of the newest ones are going to last a long, long time, I think. Phil and Trempolo, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Our hybrid, our Camry hybrid, I get frustrated because we, of course, start out on gasoline, and that's the most, energy used to get you up to speed. I'm just wondering, do they have any cars that you can choose to just use the electric to get up to speed, and then it switches over to gas, on the highway when you really need it?
So with these, a hybrid that's not a plug-in hybrid, that is a car that you can plug in and drive 20 miles on, like the Volt or the Prius plug-in. This has been something people complain about for a long time. They want that E button where they can choose, if I'm just going to drive across the street, I just want to use a little energy from my hybrid battery. And they offered that as an option in Japan on the Prius, and I could never understand why they didn't let you do that in the U.S. Technically, there's no reason.
You use all kinds of gas to get up to speed.
Well, that's kind of what so the hybrid as a system is optimized to be most efficient. So even though, in our heads it uses a lot of gas to get up to speed, it is using energy from the battery for that acceleration as well, some energy from it.
And so it's probably more efficient than if you just use the electricity, which you're
saying. Right. Yeah, I think the using electric only is only a benefit if you don't want your car to turn on to drive, across the street or whatever. But as far as the optimization of the vehicle, they've put a lot of effort into optimizing the fuel economy.
I think overall it's going to be hard to beat that onboard computer for sure. It's got a lot more kind of capacity to calculate that, what's the best way to propel that car.
And maybe one further way to put it is that there are kind of gradations of hybrids. If you have a hybrid that's like a really full hybrid or like a heavy hybrid, it's going to use the electric motor a lot more and the gas engine a lot less. If you have a very mild hybrid, it's going to almost not use the battery at all because there's just not much energy.
I get a kick out of John Dolan from the Toyota dealership here in Madison, because every once in a while they say, I was over on the east side of Madison. I drove all the way over to the west side, and I never once had to. I went electric the whole way because he caught the lights right and everything. So you can do it. You can use that battery quite a bit, as a matter of fact. And I think I agree with you. I've looked at the car companies and what they're doing. They really are trying to make it the most efficient possible. So if it takes a little gas and a little electricity, that's probably, for now, the most efficient way.
That's their big selling point.
Well, Phil and John, it's always a big pleasure. Now, your website, John, again?
Energy.wisc.edu.
Energy.wisc.edu. That's the place to go. And it's been a pleasure, and I hope we have a chance to do this again. Appreciate it. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks so much, Larry.
Phil Kohlmeyer is a grad student at UW-Madison in electrical and computer engineering. John Greenler directs education for both the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. We'll do that again. That was fun, talking about electrical vehicles. And it was fun to learn about electrical trucks that Phil's been working on. Well, it's also fun to learn about the weather, and that'll be coming up next with our weather guys here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.